We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to another live edition of the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel, and we're talking about another comeback win. What's up, Jack?
Ice. All I see is ice, baby. Ice.
That was big time. Spencer Dinwiddie with a four-point play. D'Angelo backs it up with a three-point play right behind it. Just huge. They were down 21 in this game. They pulled off the victory, 117-115, on the road in Orlando in a game where it felt like they didn't have the juice, and they just grinded it out.
That's what good teams do, Nick. It was the unwinnable. It was almost like we were playing worse against the Orlando Magic than we were against Houston, yet we somehow pulled this one out. I think it comes down to, as much as the awesome historic feats from guys like D'Lo and Spencer, we just played some defense towards the end, and it got us down the stretch.
Yeah, we did. And, you know, looking at the stats, first quarter, they allowed Orlando score 32, second quarter, 35, third quarter, 28, fourth quarter, only 20 points. Also, a big shout out to Damari Carroll. He's just been huge in the comeback, huge in this comeback. He's just been doing the small things, grinding out the play. One thing that really sticks out is his team defense, his help defense, where he kind of pulls off his guy at the last second just to contest the shot a little more.
Yeah, funnily enough, and I don't really buy into box plus minors that much, but it reflects well tonight for a guy like Damari Carroll, who led the team with D'Angelo Russell in plus 10. Whenever he was out there, the Nets just looked better. His aggression, you know, he's mentioned that before to reporters and the media. When he's aggressive and attacking the hole, his finishes he just shows so much strength. He's one of probably the strongest players on the Nets roster right now, and his ability to finish through contact, he's been absolutely outstanding, and he's lifting the guys on both ends of the floor. We need him, and I know a lot of guys have advocated for a trade for him, but he ain't leaving, baby.
Yeah, no, he's definitely the team leader of this team. One thing you mentioned, the drives, Jack, great job of body positioning and using that scoop layup. It also helps when the other team has to respect the pick and roll with either Dinwiddie and Allen or D'Lo and Allen. It just allows him to get that open lane because they're just throwing the pass right off of that, driving to the rim. Really impressive stuff. But obviously, the Nets wouldn't have even been in this game without D'Angelo Russell. Big time first half, 24 points, finished with 40 points, 16 to 25, 8 to 12 from three. And you showed me a stat in the middle of the game. Only player this season to score 19 straight.
This dude is a beast, man. Get him in the All-Star game, Nick. What are we talking about? F the likes of Bradley Beal, Nikola Vucevic. Our boy D'Lo is making his name heard. And these are the statement games that I don't care if he doesn't get to the free throw line. All the naysayers around him. He scored 40 freaking points, 16 to 25 from the field, 8 of 12 from three. Is that enough for you guys? Seven assists too, and one turnover. I mean, we've been naysayers of him in the past, but we've been a lot higher on him of late. I think people had better start giving him credit soon. You know, that effective field goal percentage, whatever you want to talk about it. I did like his aggression as well tonight. You know, he hit hard. He wasn't the most smooth around the rim, but he was making the few. And I like it when it just opened up his entire game. And a nigh-on perfect game from D'Angelo tonight.
And we talked about this on the previous shows. His signature move is that ball fake floater game. He just kills that. Whenever he's in that motion, it just is almost a guarantee he's going to knock down the shot.
Yeah, he's become an elite three-point shooter. Like, he's elite in that area. And for a guy who wasn't known to be in that sort of, you've got to give a lot of credit to the coaching staff and full credit to a guy like D'Angelo Russell, who was just absolutely popping.
Yeah, a big-time game. And also, Spencer, not a great first half again. Second half, he picked it up. 20 points, 6 of 11 from the field, 3 of 7 from deep. He was big in that third quarter and helping get the deficit under 10. And we talked about that in the DMs. You know, if they got it within a reasonable distance before that fourth quarter, I felt like they had a chance.
I think a lot of fans have been hoping for the Spencer and D'Lo big-time performances at the same time, and it happened tonight. Spencer was huge. You know, I mentioned the aggression of Damari Carroll. The size really bothered us most of the night with guys like Jonathan Isaac, Aaron Gordon, Mo Bamba sort of being real forces down low. When Aaron Gordon was out due to injury for the sort of remainder of the game from late in the third and the fourth, it really opened things up for the Nets. They really missed his offense, and things worked out well for us. You know, Terrence Ross was still good, but Spence was just making plays whenever D'Lo was off the floor. And when both of them were on the floor, they just seemed to have a real nice energy.
Yeah, and you mentioned the size. In that first half, I think Orlando had 8 or 9 offensive rebounds. They only finished with 12. So they made some adjustments at halftime, and they really did a better job protecting the boards.
Yeah, I think that was one area where we were down like 20-10 after the first or something like that. So to be able to even it up, that's really an area where I think the Nets really pride themselves on is defensive rebounding. You know, I think it can't be underestimated. Yes, man-on-man defense and blocks are wonderful. And Jared Allen had a couple of them again tonight, more than a couple. But defensive rebounding is, you know, the fulcrum to any good defensive squad. You know, that's where the defense ends. It ends with the rebound. So if the Nets, like we mentioned in our pregame, if the Nets do the right thing on the boards, then it all sort of turns out quite well.
Yeah, and you mentioned Jared Allen, and this is it's a lot about his development this game. Offensively, did not really have much of an impact. 6 points, 2 of 6 on the field. You just didn't really feel him out there. Orlando did a good job, but he did a nice job on the boards. 10 rebounds in the second, not in the second half, but he picked it up in the second half. 10 rebounds overall and 4 blocks. His rim protection was elite. You know, he baited Vucevic a couple times, and they're getting a big-time rejection on him.
Yeah, and he made the plays at the right time. He made them in the fourth. Like you mentioned, Nick, it showed his maturity, his development. Obviously, he's in his second season. I think we forget that quite a bit, that this is a guy that's played, you know, barely 80 games in his career, and he's impacting, you know, a playoff team right now. So, and he's the sort of defensive stalwart. Yes, he can get bullied sometimes. He doesn't have the size that we want. His man-on-man defense isn't tremendous, but you cannot question the desire and the will that this kid has. And I think that's what a lot of people scared a lot of other teams away from him in terms of his motivation and his passion for the game. You certainly can't question that.
Yeah, he's definitely been more passionate than I think all the draft reports had of him. He's done a great job, and he's just developing. Like you said, Jack, he's only 20 years old, and the muscle that he's going to add over the next few seasons is going to be huge in his development. You know, also, Trevion Graham, not a great scoring game. He was okay in the first half, but his defense was definitely fell against some of the bigger bodies in there, using that toughness we needed.
I really like it when him and Damari are out there together. I'd be curious to see the net ratings and the plus minus when both of those two are on the court at the 3 and the 4. They just seem to have similar skill sets of sorts. Obviously, Damari's probably a more mature and ready version. But Trevion Graham can look to a guy like Damari Carroll of where his career can go. A long-term vet guy who can impact winning basketball, hit his threes. I think that you can't underestimate the leadership that he's shown, as we talked about earlier. But Trevion was good defensively. He had his moments. I think there's times where he can be a little bit, it's just like he doesn't fit. Where does he fit in terms of the overall schemes? But I think that could be said of a lot of other players when D'Lo was sort of our only offensive guy in that first half. But if it weren't for him, we wouldn't be in this game at all.
And he hit a big three in the fourth quarter. You know, he didn't knock down all of his threes during the game, but in that fourth quarter, he knocked down a big one, which is important. You know, talking about some guys who didn't necessarily have great games, you know, Rodion's kind of struggling this game. Obviously, early timeout, Kenny kind of yelled at him a little bit. I think he just didn't necessarily have the juice tonight, and you can kind of see it.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be part of the maturation process for any rookie, let alone a guy like Rodion Skuritz, who has forced himself into the starting lineup. I think we all know that Damari Carroll is a more capable, ready player, and in terms of impacts winning basketball far more often. But to show the confidence in him, I think that's still a good thing. And, you know, these are sort of turning points in terms of lessons that he can learn going forward. I think it shows not necessarily a maturity from Kenny, but it just shows that he's going to be able to, you know, Rodions can't do everything that he wants to do. It shows that, you know, you need to do the right things on both ends of the floor, but he's going to bounce back. He's got really strong will. So I'd be surprised if he doesn't come back with a big performance in the next one.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, he's a young guy too. He's going to develop. He's adjusting to the game. So no real hard feelings in that. And we're going to, like you said, I expect him to kind of bounce back. A guy who's not a rookie, who had a rough game, and it looks like he got re-injured. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, 2 points, 1 of 7 from the field. He just doesn't really look himself. And then he was re-injured in this game.
Yeah, he was injured. It's hard to say what's going on with Rondae's body. But, you know, obviously the Nets keep things under a tight ship down there. But he just, there were times where he pushed the pace. He just didn't look as composed. I thought that we might see some more minutes from him, whether he is fully ready or whether he's done something again. We wish him all the best. But at the same time, you know, you don't want your body sort of breaking down at any point of the season. But hopefully it's minor more than anything.
Yeah, hopefully he can get 100%. It looks like he might have came back a touch early, because even in the Houston game, he didn't necessarily look himself. Obviously, there's some adjustment to NBA basketball, but, you know, best of luck to him to get 100% healthy. Ed Davis, who didn't necessarily play a great first half, which is probably the first time I could say about him all season, he picked up in the second half and brought that toughness, and he was just that rebound vacuum.
Yeah, 9 rebounds. 9 rebounds, 3 offensive. Got a little diamond there. I think our best offensive player of the night were Damari Carroll, and that ball was fizzing around. That was just absolutely gorgeous. And the Nets have those quite consistently. But I'm going to give a minor shout out to a guy who wasn't necessarily amazing from the field, but hit some big shots in Shabazz Napier. Those threes from him were just absolutely crucial.
Yeah, they kept us in the game, especially when Orlando was getting those big leads. They were just the right time. And he did a pretty good job energy-wise, kind of disrupting DJ Augustine a little bit too. So overall, you know, I thought, you know, Shabazz came in and brought the energy, which you kind of look for, especially when your team is down in that first half and doesn't really have the juice.
Yeah, when you need the bucket, when you need the right assist. He wasn't perfect by any means. He might have taken a few too many shots, taken some bad shots. His size might have been a liability at times, but I thought Shabazz in his 18 minutes tonight was very serviceable. Those 4 threes.
He's got that hot and cold. You know, like, I have a love-hate relationship with Shabazz. Like, sometimes I love him out there, and then other times, like you said, he'll kind of take an extra shot or two, but it's like you kind of feel like he deserves it because he hustles a little bit. And, you know, Joe Harris was a little bit off tonight. He looked a little fatigued, a couple short on three-pointers, which is not something we're used to seeing.
Still hit 3 of them, though, 3 of 8 from 3.
Which is crazy. You know, we were like, oh, yeah, he was kind of cold, but he's 3 of 8.
Still nearly 50% from the field. What are you doing slandering my boy? Get off the pod, Nick. Let's get on a Joe Harris lover. I acknowledged a couple of times Joe Harris made some poor passes. You know, 3 turnovers is just too much from a guy like him who doesn't initiate the offense. And I think, you know, as much as I think some of those turnovers were also offensive fouls, which were just, as you mentioned, Nick, and we've talked about plenty when during the games in our DMs, you know, if you're going to call them on one side, you call it on the other. And it certainly tended to even out in that second half.
Yeah, I felt like in the fourth quarter, they finally started calling Orlando for some of the moving picks, which they weren't doing early in the game. But that also comes with, if you're playing hard and you're playing aggressive, the refs are more likely to give you the calls. In the first half, the Nets didn't have that energy. They didn't play aggressive. You're not going to get the calls. And that's what really changed in the third and fourth quarter. You know, going to the half, they had 3 free throws. They finished in the second half with 15.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a dramatic change. And that came with guys like Spencer Dinwiddie. That came with guys like Damari Carroll. You know, I think that there was, in that second half, that's the Brooklyn Nets way. Obviously, having Aaron Gordon out certainly did help. But I think that we were just making plays on both ends of the floor. And I think the energy was being fed on either end. You know, the defense was feeding the offense. The offense was feeding the defense. It's just a tangible energy that all the players could feel. And just some big plays all around. And I certainly didn't expect, I was quite despondent throughout the game. If you go through the Nets Republic Twitter feed, you can probably tell from the nature of my tweeting But towards the end, the caps lock was in full force.
Yeah, yeah, I had to kind of get you back in the juice, Jack. I could tell that you didn't have much faith, and then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, there we go. But I felt like another thing in this game, Orlando was extremely hot. You know, some of it was the Nets not playing great defense in the first half, but they were shooting like 50% from three. And checking the stats before the game, they're like 25th in true shooting percentage. So not a great shooting team. It kind of balanced out toward the end, and they shot 38% from three. Some of that also was the Nets defense forcing guys like Jonathan Isaac to take threes or Briscoe to take threes, guys who aren't necessarily great scorers. So it was adjustments, but also some it kind of came closer to the mean at the end.
Yeah, basketball is this funny way of just balancing things out. It's obvious. I don't want to get very existential here, Nicholas, but it's a bit like life, my friend. You're never too up, you're never too down. But with this Nets team, boy, you feel a full range of emotions, that's for sure.
It's crazy if you look at, like, you know, on the matchups, they'll have, like, the lead. The Nets were up in, like, that first quarter for a quick second, and they were down the entire game until the end of the fourth quarter, and they ended up winning by two. Like, it's just ridiculous. And those big shots, you can see the confidence in the team. Like, as soon as they got to 6 and 4 points, you saw everybody on that team just felt like they were confident they were going to pull off the win, get the stops, and knock down the shots.
Yeah, we didn't have the lead apart from 2-0. So, like, we probably had the lead for about 3 or 4 minutes in the entire game. Obviously, for those that don't know, Nick and I obviously converse quite frequently during the games, and Nets and Nick's just like, you know, we can get it down to single digits here. And I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. we're a nice yin and yang, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, we had the prediction going to the game. You predicted the loss, and I predicted the win, but we had to keep it the same as last time, and it seems like it's working out. And
I'm predicting a Nets loss next time, Nick. That's sure.
I know going to the game now, we have to kind of do these pre-games every show, so I know people are asking. We're going to probably do it Sunday, but before we get to that, Jack, any other thoughts on this game or any other topics you want to touch on?
I think that this, if you're a Magic fan, obviously there are probably not many listening. it's not the best sort of result, but this is a Nets podcast, so we're pretty bloody happy here.
Yeah, exactly, Jack. And it was a big win. Like, think about this team. We're, I think at one point in the season, they hadn't come back from a double-digit deficit the entire season, and now they've come back from down 20 already at least two times this month. So that just tells you about the growth and development of this team and the confidence they have. And we didn't even mention, they're one game over 500 right now, which seems like a ginormous accomplishment.
We are sixth now after that Heat loss to the Detroit Pistons. Sixth. The Brooklyn Nets are sixth in the standings, Nick. It's unheard of. We went on an 8-game losing streak. I'm finding it really hard to find words to describe this season and my love for this team. It's a roller coaster. I mean, to quote the cliches, but man, it's been up and down. But the highs have been bloody good.
Yeah, what is that? 16 wins in the last 21 games. They've been extremely, they've literally been one of the best teams in the NBA since the start of December. So that's, I mean, as optimistic as I was going to the season, which I thought the playoffs were a real possibility, I did not think sixth seed, and I didn't think we'd see a stretch like this, especially without Caris LeVert, who we did get some good news. It looked like he was progressing a little bit more before the shoot around as well.
Yeah, he looked nice. He looked really nice. Obviously, Coach Kenny was non-committal about it. He'll be back before. Oh, surprise with Coach Kenny. But it'll be interesting to see whether he does come back before the All-Star break. I'd put a fair chunk of money that he'll be back after. But he just adds to this team. You know, just imagining going forward, adding Caris LeVert into the rotation, you know, lessening the minutes of guys like Trevion Graham and Rodion's, you know, guys who can still contribute, but I think will be better in lesser roles. And you give those minutes to, it's just going to make us so bloody dangerous. I think it could be similar to a Boogie situation where in terms of the integration might be a little bit tricky and the chemistry and such. But I think because the off-court chemistry is so great and these guys just have a real willingness to share and to grow together, I think it should be fine. And I think Spencer is going to be able to probably adjust best. But I think hopefully this confidence and the recent form of D'Lo allows him to sort of play well alongside of Caris LeVert. Because I think, you know, we talked about three-guard lineups with Caris LeVert are going to be bloody awesome. I mean, early in the season, they weren't as successful, but I think now that Spencer and D'Angelo have established a really good on-court and off-court rapport, I think you add in Caris LeVert, there might be some bumpy roads, but, you know, it's a Nets team. It's every single Nets game, there's a bumpy road. So I'm excited to see how it progresses.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what he can bring defensively. And if I had to guess whose minutes, yeah, a little bit from Trevion, a little from Rodion's, I wouldn't be surprised we see Shabazz minutes cut again, which, you know, no offense to him. He's just obviously a liability defensively. He can bring that spark, and he'll probably get a little bit. But you replace that with Caris LeVert, a guy who can drive to the rim offensively. You know, his three-point shot's still a little inconsistent, but the defensive potential he showed this season would be a big plus to this team, especially when you're going against teams and they're putting up 30 points in a quarter. So a lot of faith and confidence in this Nets team moving forward, and hopefully they can continue to build off this development and this winning stretch they're having.
Yeah, I mean, three in a row now, I think tied out of all Eastern Conference teams for winning streaks. I think the Sixers are another team that have got one. So we're one of the form teams of the NBA, Nick, and I think that stretch hopefully will continue. But I'm not going to predict that way because I'm not going to jinx my boys.
Yeah, and obviously they have a big game on Monday against Sacramento. 2 days of rest, though. Then they have Orlando again Wednesday at home, and then the Knicks Friday as well at home. So three games at home, potential to push this streak to six games, which is, you know, not crazy to say earlier in the year, you're like six-game winning streak for the Nets, no way. But the way they're playing, it looks like a real possibility coming up. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, like you said, Jack, but they're in good position to go on a six-game winning streak.
Yeah, I'd be happy with 2-1 over that stretch. I think that we might drop one. The Sacramento Kings are a really good basketball team.
We need to get more optimism in you, Jack. I don't know what I have to do. I have to fly to Australia, but...
Dude, you're not going to be flying anywhere with that cold that you got right now.
I know. There people are like, what's wrong with this dude? But, Jack, final topics you want to get into?
I was just going to say, I think that the Magic the next time around are going to be quite motivated. I think that watch this space for if Aaron Gordon's going to be playing, because he was sort of bullying us really big time. I think that the Magic sort of saw the prototype for how they can sort of beat us in terms of using their size. And I mean, I really like Jonathan Isaac. That kid can close out, and that kid is strong. But enough about the Magic. The Nets, what can we say?
Yeah, honestly, the one positive going to that game, like you said, it's extremely hard to beat a team two times in a row in such a short period of time. But the Nets probably will not play that bad in the first half like they did tonight. I expect a better effort, especially at home. So it's a real possibility to be able to beat them. But like you said, they're going to have to do a better job with Aaron Gordon if he's healthy at that time.
Yeah, I think there's going to be plenty of things going forward. But first, we've got the Kings, so we've got to deal with them first.
Exactly. All right, Jack, that wraps it up. As always, thank everybody for listening, checking us out live. It'll still be on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Dash Radio. But, Jack, that does it for me. Go Nets.
Go Nets.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.